This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 5, Episode 19 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And I'm Max.
And today is part 4-5 in our series
Six.
On William Shatner, where we look at his portrayals of himself in various movies to theoretically create a cohesive continuity. And today I guess we'll see. Today is the fourth film in the Shatner cinematic universe, Dodgeball, a true underdog story. So, there is some debate as to whether or not this one actually counts, because there's some debate as to whether or not William Shatner actually does play himself in this particular film, but we'll get into that later on. Now, John, I know you're a big fan of Dodgeball. Would you like to give a synopsis of the film?
Yes. Ben Stiller runs an evil, giant, mega gym that wants to run poor, defenseless Vince Vaughn's gym out of existence. And they wind up getting into a dodgeball tournament in Vegas. And, of course, it's the since it's a true underdog story, it's about an underdog fighting against the odds to win that dodgeball tournament and keep their identity, keep their gym going. It's like Rocky.
Yes. It is kind of like Rocky in a lot of ways, or not.
There are some differences, some similarities.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So, yeah, this was written and directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber, and it stars Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn. Christine Taylor is in it. Rip Torn, Justin Long, Stephen Root, lots of people. Alan Tudyk, Missy Pyle. So, let's just talk about our general thoughts about this movie. Max, what are your thoughts on Dodgeball?
I had no feelings about this movie while watching it until the very end when they played the Deus Ex Machina joke. And I thought, you know what? I'm on board now.
Where was the Deus Ex Machina joke? I don't think I remember that.
It's basically the trophy.
Yeah.
Okay, someone needs to explain that to me. I missed that. What's going on?
It's literally labeled Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't even see that.
Really?
Guess that shows how much I was paying attention.
Man, when Shatner's not on screen, you're like, whatevs, you guys. I'm going to go make a sandwich.
Just tuning out.
No. Here's what it was. When Shatner was on screen, and my wife can attest to this because she walked in the door while I was watching it.
You were just furiously sketching him in the nude.
Well, yeah, but like while I was doing that, I was sitting like on the ottoman in front of the TV, really super close, like as close as I could get, because I was desperately trying to read his name tag to see if you could see whether or not it said William Shatner on it. But it was teeny, 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 tiny print, and I think it actually said Dodgeball Chancellor on there. So that was no help.
They were going to make you work for it.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that later. So, okay, so not a huge fan in general, Max, or did that one joke redeem the movie for you?
Well, I mean, it's one of those movies. There are a number of these, kind of like a lot of movies that Ben Stiller gets involved in. There's sort of like the there's the dichotomy. There are the ones that are kind of just joke factories, and the ones that are joke factories with characters. This one's basically just a joke factory, and I can sort of take those or leave those. I can leave Zoolander. Some people love it. I don't really have strong feelings about a lot of Ben Stiller stuff. This is one of those things where like, I wouldn't have had strong feelings one way or the other, but that one joke basically made it so that, like, I would say, yeah, if you're going to watch one of those dumb Ben Stiller movies, this one's okay.
Okay. All right. Now, what about you, John? I take it that your opinion is much stronger than Max's.
Yeah, I love Dodgeball. I think it's hysterical. But I willingly attest to the fact that I think that anything that touches on slapstick humor, anything that touches on, you know, just the if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. If you can dodge traffic, you can dodge a ball. Like their training sequence. I remember seeing this in the movie theater with my wife and just embarrassing her because I was laughing so hard at the different jokes. You know, like people, you know, like I'm the guy that watches Three Stooges and like laughs hysterically, or the last 10 minutes of Home Alone. Like I'm crying. I'm laughing so hard. This is the type of humor I'm in for. I love that type of stuff. And it's like a live action Bugs Bunny cartoon or something.
Aren't the last 10 minutes of Home Alone like his family arriving and the heartbreaking like reuniting of a separated family and like a child who was terrified that his family was lost forever and
hysterically
like this
funny.
Old guy reuniting with his child. I mean, like it's you were laughing hysterically during Home
I was. I
You're
just
a
found
serial they, killer. Just
I'm actually the real man with the shovel in the neighborhood.
That
but
is
the rumors are true. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Home Alone was shot in the town that Max and I grew up in, and that choir that the
not the house though,
not the house, but the choir that the little girl is in, that was actually my mom's church choir, and so like my cousin is in there and everything, and I was in that choir, but they only wanted girls.
I was gonna say, isn't it a girls' choir?
Yes.
Spoilers.
Still bitter.
We've got
about
something
that
coming
one,
up for the season finale.
But what can you do? Okay. Well, I think that I kind of fall in the middle on this movie between the two of you. You know, John, I don't think that if you're a big fan of slapstick, I don't think that our senses of humor are similar because I can't stand slapstick, honestly. I just don't think it's funny.
It's a personal
That's
preference.
Me.
I get it.
Preference. And I mean, like, the whole if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Like, that to me, like, is funny. But then when he's actually, like, whipping the wrenches at them, I'm just like, I don't know. Okay.
Oh, it's hilarious in the trailer. Because the idea is hilarious. But, like,
yes.
30 seconds in, you're like, okay, I got the joke.
it's like Charlie Chaplin, you know, all the way up through like Three Stooges and stuff. I'm just like, I can't do this, you know. And I think that's where the movie kind of falters for me. There's a lot of stuff in it that I do like, kind of a lot of the gags and stuff like that, and sort of the humorous take on professional sports or whatever you want to call them.
Yocho.
Yeah, you know, yeah. That type of thing I think is really cool. More than anything else, what this movie wants me to do, like the first thing that I think of is like, why isn't professional dodgeball a thing? You know, and I wonder what that would look like, because there's like a lot of sports where like people play them casually and then they're in their backyard, and then like they're Olympic sports and you see the Olympians play them and it's like, whoa, so that's what it looks like when, like, the most skilled athletes in the world play ping pong? Okay,
yeah.
That's weird. You know?
I think the reason why professional dodgeball isn't a thing is because if you imagine, like, the arms race of any particular sport, the acceleration of skill in any particular team would result in serious permanent injuries.
Yeah,
the idea is to throw a ball at someone's body. And like that, you would end up with like deaths quickly.
But those balls are very soft. You can get those whipped at your head.
Yes,
and
when
matter.
Somebody tackles you, they're just tackling you. But if you hit someone hard enough, you can kill them just from the inertia. And if you took a guy who can pitch a ball 100 miles an hour and put a dodgeball in his hand, and that person whipped that ball as fast as they could at your head, you could die.
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, it would be a work in progress kind of thing, but that's the type of thing where I'm, like, curious as to, like,
yeah.
That's what, like, I think of when I watch this movie, which is, like, what would that look like? I imagine there'd be a lot more catching of balls.
Would they encourage or discourage steroids, do you think?
I think they'd probably discourage it, you know?
I don't know.
Even in the movie, they discourage it, right? Yeah, they win their first match.
Oh, please, there's no way those people at Globo Gym weren't on roids. Come on, man.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
I'm sure those drug tests came back. Huh?
They had the in, right? Because they said that he's friends with the dodgeball chancellor.
Let's figure out the plausibility of this scenario before we move on with the debate.
They also said it was random testing, so who's to say? But
we are debating drug testing in dodgeball.
Well, because, you know, why wouldn't you? But that's the thing that's really interesting to me about it.
I'd like to see everybody on one team come out with, like, brass neck braces so that when they get hit in the head, it doesn't break their spine. And
You can't do that.
You could.
Well, no.
The balls are the same consistency as, like, kickballs. And kickballs can hurt when they hit you in the head.
And you can seriously damage your spine by just having a small collision in your car at 10 miles an hour. If you put somebody who's strong enough into that field and they throw it hard enough, you could seriously injure somebody.
Surely there would be injuries, dodgeball injuries. But, I mean, let's just think about, you know, the fact that a baseball goes, you know, 100 miles an hour, and that thing is really, really hard and oftentimes hits people in various places where they shouldn't get hit. Yep. And, you know, it's painful, but
it rarely
results in death.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why it doesn't happen. The main one is that you're not aiming at the person. Hitting the person is considered a failure. If you inverted that priority structure and you made hitting the batter a good thing, batters would be permanently harmed that afternoon. The day that rule comes down, people would be leaving the sport permanently.
I guess so. I don't know. I really don't see it as being any harsher than, say, football, but...
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, football's dark secret is that it is really, really bad for you. And
there are
plenty of serious injuries that happen regularly.
It's not even a secret. It's like, it's in the paper. True. They're like, here are the serious injuries suffered by football players yesterday. And it's 6 pages long.
Well, and that informs who goes in my fantasy fantasy dodgeball. Would that be a thing, do you think?
Sure, why wouldn't it be?
I assume. I would immediately pick Gandalf.
Mm-hmm.
He would be really good.
I also think that if they were to do this professionally, it would be more like kind of volleyball is, where like a match consists of multiple games, because these games would go by really fast, you know?
Oh, sure.
You need to, but anyway, regardless of any of that, the other thing that this movie really sort of inspires in me is a desire to play dodgeball.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember liking it a lot when I was a kid. And why wouldn't you want to play this sport?
I loved it. I thought it was a great game. To speak to Max's point, I was the one that people wanted, because I did throw the ball awfully hard and people would cower and hide. Now, I was terrible at catching, though. And I was not the fastest person, so I had to knock people out real quick. Otherwise, I was down, you know, like, if I was, everybody targeted me, and I was done really quickly if I couldn't knock them out.
I think we'd make a good team, because I was good at dodging.
There you go.
I could stay in the game for a really long time.
And I was good at catching, so.
All right, we're forming a dodgeball league.
All right.
I think that we should. I mean, we could have, like, a Trek FM team. We could take on, like, Trekmate.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
I'm down with
it.
When
we're off mic, I'm going to ask you guys if you guys know where to score some roids.
Unfortunately, I don't, as you can probably tell by my physique, but, you know, whatever. Speaking of roids, there's a very interesting sequence which plays out completely differently than I think was intended 10 years ago.
Yeah, much funnier now. Yeah.
When Vince Vaughn, who's at his lowest point and decides to quit the game, is visited in the airport by Lance Armstrong, played by himself. And Lance Armstrong talks about how, you know, he's a big fan, and asks him why he's quitting. And he, you know, Vince Vaughn says, you know, well, things are really bad. And Lance Armstrong is like, I can understand that. You know, I almost quit when I had brain, lung, and testicular cancer simultaneously. But, you know, I didn't. But I'm sure you have a good reason for quitting. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with quitting, because then you'll have something that you regret for the rest of your life. And, yeah, I
want to throw out there too that he actually has the, as part of his lines, he says he got back on the bike and with the love and support of his wife and family won the Tour de France. And it's like, yeah, a little something extra there, Lance.
Like five times or something like that. Yeah. Very, very strange, you know. I mean, not to dump on Lance Armstrong, you know. I mean, like, honestly, like, if I came back from, you know, brain, lung, and testicular cancer, and, you know, what participated in the Tour de France, I'd be like, screw all of you people. But then again, I probably wouldn't dope either, right?
Yeah, for me, it's the lie. It's the fact that he lied. He was busted, and he kept lying, and it's just, you know, that's the problem.
Yeah, but regardless, I just thought that was a funny scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually probably now the funniest scene in the movie. But...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would agree, actually.
And that kind of leads into...
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Who cares?
into the next segment of this discussion, which is William Shatner's performance and the fact that there are a lot of people in this movie who play themselves in... you know, cameos or semi-extended cameos. You've got Lance Armstrong. You've got David Hasselhoff, who's the coach of the German team.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Chuck Norris, who is a judge. And then there's William Shatner. And William Shatner is weird because it's this gray area where they never refer to him as William Shatner. And But they never referred to him by any other name other than Dodgeball Chancellor. Regardless of any of this, William Shatner is in the movie as the Dodgeball Chancellor for, well, I guess, one extended sequence.
Yeah.
Kind of like his appearance in Showtime. So, Max, what did you think about William Shatner's performance here?
Not much, actually. I mean, when I first saw the movie, I didn't really think much about it. I thought, oh, it's fun that he's playing a goofy character again, and the idea that he's playing a version of himself seems sort of like, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, if you're going to put William Shatner in a comedy, you want him to play some sort of version of himself, which is sort of interesting in the way that he played Denny Crane, because gradually I think Denny Crane became William Shatner. Which is a weird sort of racial relationship there. Mm-hmm. But
or did William Shatner become Denny Crane?
I don't think that there's a difference between those two things.
Okay.
That's all right. Six of one, William Shatner is the other. So it's a difference without a differentiation. I'm just going to keep mangling phrases until somebody calls me on it. I thought that his appearance was funny. I thought he was clever as this bizarre presence, because in a weird way, William Shatner being the Chancellor of Dodgeball is equally plausible as there being professional dodgeball.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what they play around with here, with, you know, all of the other cameos. But again, that's something that we can get to later. John, what about you?
Well, I mean, to speak to Max's point, it is plausible because I remember a video that my cousin bought just as a joke, but it was William Shatner's paintball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember wasting half of a day slowly watching through that thing saying, why am I watching this? So it's completely plausible to me that in this dodgeball league, he would be the chancellor. Because William Shatner loves getting himself out there and he loves making a buck. And like you said, they never call him by any other name. And therefore, I think it, given the fact that he has this paintball thing in his resume, totally plausible to me that this is William Shatner. Just it's one of a side gig for him of being the dodgeball chancellor.
That's fair enough. The dodgeball thing happened about a year or so prior to this. It was actually done in
paintball
a suburb
thing.
Of Chicago. Sorry, paintball thing, yes. It was actually done in a suburb of Chicago and was sort of co-hosted by Mancow Muller.
Don't give bleep that.
All right. Do you know who he is, John? Or
of
is
course
he just
I know who he
thing?
Is.
Okay, see, I didn't know. I didn't know if he was like that. Like,
oh,
yeah.
No, he's been ruining radio all over the world for many years.
Well, one of the shows I used to listen to used to regularly destroy him, and that was always fun to listen to. I enjoyed listening to Mancow get... oh, wait, I said his name. I'm sorry, Max. I apologize.
That's okay. The world needs to know that he's a monster. I mean, he's the guy who opening day of...
Oh, my God. Don't.
Look, I'm going to just say this here. As John, you in particular, I think, will appreciate this.
I could tell this story.
Well, I'm going to. Opening day of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace... The line of people who's been waiting for hours and hours and hours outside of McClure Court
and 25
here in
years.
Chicago. Yes, they're all standing in line, mere minutes away from going into the theater to see Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. And Mancow, whose radio station is right down the street, sends out a truck with a guy sticking his head out the window with a megaphone reading spoilers from the movie to the crowd.
Oh, what an ass.
I know. That's the type of guy that he is. People were, like, throwing stuff at the car. It was crazy.
That's not even close to the worst thing he did that week.
Well, you're probably right. You're probably right.
It's a good sample of the type of person. To think that's funny is just... That's just a jerk thing to do.
It is.
Boo.
You know? So, yeah, I've seen him, like, in person a few times. Whenever, like, Shatner is in town, he has, like, for a convention or whatever, he has Mancow introduce him because apparently they're really good friends. And I think it's because of this paintball thing. But regardless, yes, since you bring up the paintball thing, you know, that is interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but that is kind of a natural progression. And I've seen that video, and it's cool. You know, I like it.
I wouldn't say cool. I really wouldn't.
Anything that with William Shatner is great, you know?
Well,
did you ever see Invasion Iowa?
No, I didn't watch Invasion Iowa.
Did you ever see Incubus?
Did you see Incubus?
No.
Oh, that the only movie ever to be shot in Esperanto.
I have heard of it. I want to see it. I will see it, but I have not seen it.
It was directed by the guy who created Outer Limits, and you can see it in Blade Trinity, because apparently
you can
they were
see
trying
like
to
30 seconds of it in Blade Trinity.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why.
I tried to wipe the memory of that movie from my brain.
shot by Conrad Hall, by the way, the legendary cinematographer.
I was going to point that out, but I didn't care either way.
Okay. Yeah. Kidnapping of an American President. Have you seen that one?
Nope.
Oh. He plays a bodyguard.
Okay, look, if you want to
like
skip
a,
one
like
of those,
Secret Service
skip that
agent.
One.
Skip
yeah,
that
that's
one.
True.
All right. All right.
Invasion Iowa, though, I think that's pretty great. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, so we're just talking about how awesome William Shatner is. I guess that's the whole point of this thing, right?
Yeah, it's an easy thing to do.
It's on topic. Anyway, yeah, but I can see that here in terms of like the natural progression, like you're saying. That's pretty interesting. I like that. I'm not going to say I had no interest in dodgeball when it came out, but I had very little interest in dodgeball when it came out. And sort of the way that things worked back then when, like, Max and I were projectionists at a movie theater is we would end up watching most of the movies, you know, for work. And if there was a movie that we really wanted to see, of course, we would make a big deal out of it. But if there was one which we were sort of on the fence about, you know, someone would watch it, whoever happened to be working that day, whatever. And or if there are multiple movies, whatever. So, you know, you split up the work. You don't always get to see these things.
Someone got screwed every once in a while.
Someone doesn't see it.
Every once in a while, somebody watched one of those movies with Rachel McAdams where she's in love with somebody and they don't get together until the very end.
Yeah, and what would sort of naturally happen is if there's a movie like Dodgeball where you're like, I want to see that, and you miss your chance to see it, you know, the night before it comes out,
you don't really
have much motivation to go back and see it with a crowd because it's like, oh, I got to watch that like with everyone else. Or, you know, because it's like, well, I'm at work, you know, and I don't, you know, like, why do I want to go back to work on my day off? But then if I'm going to a different theater, it's like I'm paying to see something which I could watch for free. And it's just like one of those things where it falls into this region where it's just like, I know now that I'm never going to see this movie.
Sure.
You know, and that was just kind of like how it was.
I know, it was great. And,
but
the Halcyon days.
The but, good old days when I knew I would never see some movies. Amazing Spider-Man 2, never in my life, ever.
But, you know, as someone who is projecting these movies, you would, of course, need to look in on them and make sure that they were running properly. And I remember that while I was projecting the movie, I looked in on it at one point, and there I see William Shatner. And I'm like, what? 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 You know, and I watched it when it came out on home video, and I thought it was pretty cool. But the only reason why I watched it was because of William Shatner's performance, and that's what I was waiting for. And that was definitely the most exciting part of the movie for me. And I like it. It doesn't. He doesn't reach the heights of comedy that he does in, say, Showtime or anything like that. But his presence and the way that he carries himself, sort of tied to his persona, is kind of perfect. And I do sort of love like the line that comes earlier in the movie when they explain how Ben Stiller's team gets involved, and he's like, I know I'm friends with the Dodgeball Chancellor, and then later on you see that the Dodgeball Chancellor is William Shatner, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense that he'd be friends with him. You know?
Yeah.
But what about how this movie fits into the rest of the Shatner cinematic universe? I mean, I guess let's take a poll first off. Is he playing William Shatner in this movie? John?
Yes.
Max?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. I would say yes, although I've been on the fence, and the thing which I think pushes it over the edge for me is that when you look at the check, the big check, it says underneath the signature, it says Dodgeball Chancellor. But the signature, if you look at it and you compare it to what's out there, which I did, it is very similar to a William Shatner signature.
There you go.
So it looks like he signed his name there. You know, the credits are kind of a weird area because everyone else who makes cameos is listed as himself, but he's listed as Dodgeball Chancellor. But then again, it seems like the not the players, but the administration in the Dodgeball world is very much populated by celebrities and actors in particular. You've got David Hasselhoff as a coach. You've got Chuck Norris as a judge. It just makes sense that William Shatner would be the chancellor. And because of that, I'm going to say yes, he is playing himself. And because of that, it does take place in the Shatner cinematic universe.
You want to justify it? You want to justify it? When you reach a certain level in the dodgeball hierarchy, they stop calling you by your name and they call you by your title, like Mr. President.
There you go. See, that works.
Excellent. Well reasoned.
What about you, John? You said yes definitively. Why is that?
Because it's him being him. It's William Shatner. And like I said, they never refer to him by another name. And there's documentary evidence out there that he's willing to do anything for a buck. So it would make perfect sense that he would take this job at a dodgeball association and be there for the tournament in Vegas. So therefore, that's my reasoning. It's definitely Shatner.
Man, you know, you bring up the tournament in Vegas and everything like that. That could work for us, too. Like, if we had, you know, like I was saying, we could play Trekmate. But really what we could do is, like, we could have, like, a Trek FM league, and there could be a Trekmate league. Yeah. And, like, the commentary Trek stars could, you know, face off against To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Like, the winner. and like, the winner in these different divisions, you know, could all then
Trying to make everything baseball.
It's not baseball. That's not how it works in baseball.
You're dividing it. You've just divided it into two different leagues.
No, but that's what they had in dodgeball, too, right? They had regional things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we could all meet in Vegas at the convention for the finals, right?
I think that would be great. Maybe we could get Mr. Shatner to be the chancellor of this league.
Yes.
There you go.
Now you're thinking, all right, yes. this is what we should be doing here. We need to talk to Creation. I know they're looking for ideas to make things bigger for the 50th anniversary. They just announced it. It's going to be, you know, in Vegas in August of 2016. I think we need to make this happen.
I think
Who wouldn't be in? Are you telling me? Is there anyone who would not be in on this? Anyone who would not want to play dodgeball?
No, I think everybody would be in. This would be tremendous fun if we could make that work. Gosh, that would be fun.
I think we should do this.
In costume?
And then, well, I mean, but that's the thing. Everyone has their uniforms and everything.
Does it have to be a Star Trek costume? Can I be Batman in the Star Trek universe?
There is circumstantial evidence that Batman does take place in the Star Trek universe.
Excellent.
Because if you look at Buck Bokai's baseball card, one of the teams that he played for was the Gotham City Bats. So obviously that is a reference to Batman, but the fact that there is a Gotham City in the Star Trek universe.
Done.
I'd say it's the same one.
Excellent.
So there you go.
Excellent. You just made a little boy's dreams come true there.
I'm glad I could. But it's because of that I've always wanted to get like a 5950 model Batman cap and be like, oh yeah, this is, you know, Star Trek Expanded Universe. It's the Gotham City Bats cap, of course. Right? Bokai played for them. Anyway. You want one too, right, Max?
Such a great story. I'm so loving this thing about 5950s and baseball in Gotham City. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I know, right?
You gotta tell me more about the 5950 baseball teams.
Okay, Max. So you say that it doesn't matter whether or not he's playing himself. Why is that?
Because we use differentiation to differentiate things. If there's a lack of differentiation, then that indicates sameness. So if you don't have a name for a character, that character is the person playing the character.
Okay. I guess it could be.
Because he's a person and he's playing a character that doesn't have a name, like, obviously the indication is that he's playing himself or a person who doesn't have sufficient differentiation to be an individual. In that case, you default back to the presence of the person playing the role, and you don't get William Shatner to play a character without differentiating qualities, without essentially casting William Shatner in the role as himself. You're expecting him to bring something to the character that is more than dodgeball chancellery.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter if anyone on set decided that he was playing himself. He is, by default, playing himself.
All right. Okay. So if we're all in agreement that one way or another he's playing himself, how do we feel about this movie fitting into the Shatner cinematic universe, if it is a cohesive whole? Max, where do you see this fitting in? How do you see it fitting in?
Well, I've already stated that I don't approve of the notion of it being a cohesive whole. I don't think that's a legitimate construct. I think that by nature of this concept, you have to admit that there is no completion to this universe. It incorporates our own. It incorporates fictional universes. You cannot say that it's a cohesive whole.
Okay.
So it fits as well as anything else does. It fits just as well as anything that happens on TV.
Okay. All right. What about you, John? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, if it's him playing, I mean, so far, the way I define the Shatner cinematic universe is anything where Shatner is playing himself. And if you want to get more technical, he straddles dimensions and we see glimpses into these alternate timelines that he inhabits, but it's still him.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. I guess I think of it in more of sort of a literal fashion where it's like last we saw him, he was directing, you know, Robert De Niro and Eddie Murphy. In at least a commercial in Showtime, and it's like, well, how is he now the dodgeball chancellor? But I think that if you look at the way that the character is established in Free Enterprise, he really does have that sort of thing going where he's trying everything. He's doing what, you know, John, you were talking about him doing in real life, which is, you know, not necessarily doing anything for a buck, but not allowing himself to be pigeonholed into just one thing, you know? Yeah. He is a writer and a director and an actor, and he's also, you know, as we've established in Free Enterprise, he's a rapper. Here we're establishing that he's a dodgeball chancellor. And in the next movie, we're going to establish that he's, a seller of secrets or something like that? I guess we'll find out.
Late
I forget
onset
exactly
ADD.
How that works. A what?
Late onset ADD.
Okay.
Because he was, what, 60 when it kicked in? And it's pretty serious. He does everything. It's a little weird.
But you know, more power to him. Why not? You know?
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's an indicator that he has an inability to focus on one task at a time.
Okay. That's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, there's even that whole bit in Free Enterprise where he comes in wearing, like, the aviator outfit. And they're like, you know, where'd you come? And he's like, I just flew in or I just beamed in. I forget what he says.
Maybe he had been influenced, actually, by studying film in preparation to become the dodgeball chancellor, because Rip Torn's character is wearing that aviator jacket. Maybe he'd been influenced.
Yeah, why not?
There you go.
It works, you know. So I think this does work. I think that it's probably the most tangential of all of the entries, but I still think that it does work, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here. Which, actually, come to think about it, the next one is a prequel. So,
yes.
So, yeah. In terms of the timeline, this is the last entry chronologically in the Shatner cinematic universe. So
it doesn't matter if it's a prequel. He can travel through time.
That's right.
Maybe he's kind of like the wolf in the Tarantino universes.
Or maybe he's kind of like Captain Kirk in that he can travel through time.
Okay.
Maybe he's like Quantum Shatner.
Yeah, just jump Quantum through. Shatner. I like it.
He's
like
sent
it
to places where he needs to fix things.
He's stealing Archer's bit. Even Archer can't.
You don't know that for sure.
I guess not.
That whole show's continuity is all screwed up, man.
I guess so. You're right. All right. So, John, any final thoughts on Dodgeball?
I think it's hysterical. And I think if somebody hasn't seen it, they should just go ahead and sample it. I think you'll get a good laugh out of it.
All right. And Max?
I think it is totally watchable.
I'm kind of with Max on that. I think it's totally watchable as well. I thought it was very amusing the first time I saw it. I thought it was semi-amusing this time. There's a lot of things in there which are worth taking a look at.
You're not going to regret it. You're not going to regret watching Dodgeball. It's not like a movie where you're like, oh, that was terrible. I mean, even if you think it's incredibly stupid, you still come away like, there's good stuff in there.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. You put it all together, may not work tremendously well, but there's certainly little beats here and there which are great. And, hey, you know, lots of little Star Trek not nods, but you know, history and tangential things in there, and that Ben Stiller is a huge Star Trek fan.
Justin Long is there.
Justin Long and Missy Pyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both of them. It's, you know, Ben Stiller's production company is even Red Hour Films, named after, of course, Return of the Archons. He's a huge Star Trek fan. In fact, apparently, he's got a vault in his basement, which is just filled with Star Trek
actors' bones.
Holy relics.
When Leonard Nimoy died, he started tweeting things.
Where
about,
could like, I get his bones?
No, that's the reason it was at the secret location, is they wanted to keep his body away from Ben Stiller.
I've got this Genesis Planet project. It's a big deal. It's in my basement.
Yeah,
I've been working on Mark Lenard for several years. It's coming together. It's almost there. I'm pretty sure I saw him smile the other day.
But he did like post a bunch of stuff about Nimoy when Nimoy died, and he even had a picture of Spock's ears in a glass case
next to his bones
in his basement. Yeah, and there was like a weird random like Gorn action figure in the background. So yeah,
he's got DeForest Kelly's bones. It's labeled bones.
Yes, bones. Yes, just waiting for that one.
Very straightforward.
Surprised it took so long to get there, honestly.
I was waiting to get there organically.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dodgeball. Go see it. Why not? Right? Yeah.
Go see it? Where are you going to go?
You know, they'll do a midnight show somewhere here or there. You never know.
Really?
Put your iPad on the other side of the room and watch it.
Yeah.
Walk to it.
There you go. All right. So, shifting gears a little bit here, we lost another big member of the Star Trek family last week. This actually happened before Nimoy passed away. I think it might have actually been the same day as Maurice Hurley, but Harve Bennett died. For those people who aren't familiar, Harve Bennett is, of course, the producer of Star Trek 2 through 5, theatrically.
The best and the worst of the whole series.
Don't start. Well, yeah, okay, 3, yeah.
You know, I'm of the opinion that Star Trek 3 on its own is very good, but it's
bad.
It taints 2. So, but anyway, Harve Bennett, you know, he really did have a hand in revitalizing Star Trek, and he's really the guy who put together Star Trek 2. Certainly pushing it in the direction that it ended up going in, even if he wasn't necessarily the hands-on guy throughout, but he wrote the original script, which was much different from the first one and everything. Star Trek III, he had even more of a hand in that he wrote it himself. And in Star Trek IV, he co-wrote that movie with Nicholas Meyer, with Meyer writing the 1986 stuff and Bennett writing the 2286 stuff, or whenever that movie takes place.
Yeah, Harve Bennett basically did all the writing in Star Trek IV, because Nicholas Meyer just did a find and replace on his previous script.
Yep.
This is true. And then he also produced Star Trek V and co-wrote the story on that one, and he even appears in it as the Admiral, who's like, well, I see we're being rather informal these days. But he's done a lot of other stuff, particularly in television. He was the producer of The $6 Million Man and The Bionic Woman. He produced a number of television movies, many of which won Emmys and stuff. And he created a number of television shows, including The Mod Squad, Time Tracks, The Invisible Man, and Invasion America. And yeah, we just thought that we should definitely mention him, because he's a huge piece in the Star Trek puzzle, and we will be covering him in depth in the not-too-distant future as well. So yeah, Harve Bennett, he will be missed.
He will. Rest in peace.
Well, it's been fun talking about Dodgeball today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And celebrate his life and celebrate his work and his talent and his integrity. And if you get a tear in the eye, that's okay. That's he would approve. Spock would approve. And, you know, he'd say, you humans, why do you feel you need to do this? But he would approve.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Montalban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Riser 5.
The shuttlecraft.
The orb.
Usually you want to be able to capture it or isolate one, but you can't do that either because it just keeps, you know, so it really does seem like a conundrum of, okay, how do we take this down?
You know, this minefield, they are the tribbles of war.
To the journey! One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now! The ready room.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
He tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the just, momentum makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, actually, it started out life as a comic book pitch. I originally came up with it to pitch to Wildstorm back when they had the comics license. The idea was it would be a one-year series that would run throughout the 12 calendar months of 2001, which was the 35th anniversary of Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
Sometimes that just works better because you can create and craft a story that's very compelling because you're not having to worry about what's happened other places. Okay, we have to make sure this is going to connect to this, and my guess is somehow Agent Carter is going to have something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on, and maybe something that happens in Age of Ultron.
Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on trek.fm. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You can leave us a voicemail. Just look on the sidebar of the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. No one sends us voicemails, except for Gene. So, come on, guys, get on that. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, where you will also find the Babel Conference, which is our sort of Facebook group forum thing, discussion group. There's a lot of discussion going on there. Just type in the Babel Conference in Facebook, and then it'll pop up. That's B-A-B-E-L. And yeah, check that out. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Books like Star Trek Movie Memories by William Shatner.
Or Up Till Now. Or Dark Victory.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Up Till Now already, right?
We talked about Dark Victory?
I'm not sure that we did. Do you want to read the description of that one?
Oh, I don't have it on me. I just remember looking that up last time we were doing this.
All right. Well, then let's talk about Star Trek movie memories. The sequel to the best-selling Star Trek Memories, documenting in deliciously lurid and candid detail all the behind-the-scenes shenanigans in the making of the 6 Star Trek movies, with on-the-scene reporting from the set of the 7th, in which Kirk dies. And, of course, there's a lot of stuff about Harve Bennett in there as well. I should also note that on Monday, if you check out Standard Orbit, you can find an episode that we did all about Harve Bennett, where we talked to John Tenuto, who knows more about Star Trek II than probably anyone else on the planet, and he gives us a lot of inside info on what exactly it was that Harve Bennett did during his time on Star Trek. So be sure to go over there and check that out on Monday.
Dark Victory is set in the Mirror Universe.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about that next week.
Neat.
As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. All right, so John, where can people find you?
I am Kessel Junkie on Twitter. And also Thursdays appearing on a show called Words with Nerds with my friend Craig.
Excellent. And Max, still haven't unlocked that Twitter account for public consumption?
Well, if I do, and people go on to my Twitter account, they will read random ramblings of me literally just filling space in a text field in order to test Twitter output using other applications.
But couldn't you, like, do both of those things?
No, that's not a thing. I can only do one thing at a time. I'm not William Shatner.
Okay, all right. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can find all of us on Twitter at ComTrackStars. You can also email us all at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. And in addition to Standard Orbit here on Trek FM, you can find me, along with Max and our friend Brandon, on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do Commentary Track Stars off topic.
We might need to get him on this show in order to have him come in as a ringer for our dodgeball victories.
I would definitely want him.
We're going to need to get him in the show in order to justify his presence.
He's been on the show before.
But we can't do it like if he's just been on once.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get him on so that we can have him as a dodgeball competitor. The dude plays rugby, you know?
Yes.
We need him
to essentially save our team.
Yes. Yeah. We'll talk to him.
He's our boy on the girls' soccer team.
There you go.
Because we are the girls of dodgeball.
Yes, we are. All right. Well, that's about it for dodgeball. We will be back next week with the final movie in the Shatner Cinematic Universe, Fanboys.